Welcome, everybody, to the PlayStation 5 Central Podcast. We reveal the news, the reviews, and the
rumors
on the PlayStation 5 and its upcoming games. I'm joined by Vikarth. How are you doing?
Doing well. We are speeding through this. This is like my times two when I listen back to this.
Oh, I want to hear this in times two. What is that shirt you've got on, Vic?
Oh, it's the script. The band, the script. They toured earlier this year or late last year.
Oh, you've been to the recent one?
Yeah, yeah. The scripts, I haven't listened to in ages, but there was a period when I was in high school, like 2011, where I was obsessed. I listened to every song, like Science and Faith, Number Three. They had some phenomenal songs at that time. And then they came recently doing their greatest hits tour.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Ooh.
That was one they played, you know. There's a few anniversary tours that bands are doing. So I'm going to Lauryn Hill later this year. Well, trying to get tickets for that. So she was a big in the hip-hop game, you know, years and years ago. So she's doing like an anniversary tour of like.
Tell me you're not going to Taylor Swift, man. I'm begging you.
I was considering it, but I'm like, nah. I mean, I haven't been into her since like 1979. I will say it, phenomenal album. I actually loved it. But after that, I haven't really been listening to her much. So we're going to Masego. He's a good artist. He's a jazzy hip hop.
Masego, I've never heard of him.
Yeah, he's good.
What about a Nickelback concert, man?
Nickelback. I would love to go to Nickelback. Do you know the most underrated Nickelback song? We danced on into the night. Hey, oh, hey, oh. That was such a good song.
Oh, you're funny. Yeah, no, I'm heading
exciting
off.
Exciting travel news.
Yeah, I'm going on holiday soon. So we will, when you're hearing this episode, guys, I would have already been on holidays. And then we're not going to have an episode next week from when you're hearing this, and then I'll be back. So, and then we're really getting into it because we've got some huge games coming. So it's going to be big. And we've already gained a lot of viewership over the last few months. So thank you for anyone new listening. It's been great to see the numbers rising.
Dan told me that his fiance, or his girlfriend, I should say, sorry, my fiance, his girlfriend begged him, Dan, please, can I see some sights? I really want to, you know, go to this country and just look at all the sights and the beaches. And Dan's like, no, I want to bring my Cue Light. I want to stay in the hotel room and I want to cloud stream my favorite video games in an international country. So
yeah, so she's going off and experiencing the sights. I'm sitting in a dark room in the hotel playing Vita and Cue Light and getting away, chipping away on the backlog. Yeah.
Exciting.
Too funny. All right, Vic, today, different episode.
Yes.
I'm going to go through some core topics, I call them, I've listed down, have a bit of a discussion, see where we land. I've got a bunch written down here. Any of them spring to mind you want to start off with?
Well, I guess we can go from the top and maybe just go with game length. I think that's a good one.
Length.
So we are doing a bunch of topics. These are topics that either, you know, a listener has written about or, you know, we've sort of thought about and they're asking our opinion on it. So I think we've got maybe, 10 topics?
There's heaps there. Topics. I've still got others I haven't put in, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think these sort of topical episodes will be periodic in a way. We'll keep doing this sort of stuff. They're just general topics. Some of them are really broad. Some like game length, for instance, but some of them you'll see are quite narrow, but they're just very specific. So I think this is a type of episode we'll keep bringing back because there's all these different topics we have, Dan and I and Jordan have opinions on that, you know, we love to talk about and flesh out, but we maybe just don't have the opportunity with all the news and the news cycle and things like that. So yeah, it's a good episode. Just have a break and let's think these things through. And I'm sure our listeners would love to, you know, write in their opinions too. And we'd love to integrate that as well. So please, if you listen to this write down what you think and we can sort of read it.
And we're also trying to do something. Yeah. We're trying to keep things fresh as well. Like we're always going to cover the news for PlayStation, but you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there where you can find the news. So we're trying to bring extra value where we can. And of course, we don't make any money off this, guys. Most podcasts big ones, they do it as their full-time jobs, that sort of thing. We don't make any money off anything. So we do it for the love of it in terms of the PS5 Central podcast. You know what I mean, man? All right.
I know what you mean.
So, Vikath, game length. I want to ask you the question, does it matter in 2023?
That's such a good question. Let me put it like this. I think game length, I think, always matters. The length of any story, any piece of media matters. But the usage of length as a metric for the quality of the game, I think, should never have been a thing. And I think it's so outdated. And yeah, there's never been a point in my life where I've actually seen that metric as useful. And I don't know why it's come about. I think obviously.
Are you sure about that though? Because there's plenty of people, yourself included, that will stay away from long games.
Okay. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Even if they are amazing, you know that they're 100 hours long and you know that that's going to be tough for you to do.
But that's not a measure of quality, though. So, for instance, a game that I really, really want to play is Persona 5. And
oh, yeah.
I know that is a long-ass game. I know that game is amazing, but
if you type in long games, that'll come up in the list every time.
Of course. Yeah. So it's not a matter of quality for me. It's just like that game I know is amazing and it's a top-quality game. I just don't have the time for it. I need to find time for it. Same as Red Dead 2, right? That's like 120 hours, even more.
Yeah.
Game length, it doesn't degrade the quality. But what I've seen, for instance, is there's this need for games to be bloated to, you know, an 8-hour game is not enough anymore. Or a 12-hour game is not enough anymore. We need it to be this open world, 40-hour activity-filled game, Ubisoft. And we have to fill it with time. And you know, that, for me, a longer game doesn't always mean better. You know, a short, sharp game like Far Cry 3, not short and sharp. That was still, you know, a fair amount of hours.
8 to 10 hours it was. But that seems like 8 to 10 hours is a lost, forgotten art. Don't get many games like that anymore.
Don't you agree that Far Cry 3 and Far Cry 6 probably had the same open world, animals, hunting, outposts, vehicles, weapons, but one was just way larger than the other?
Yeah.
But do you see, like, it's not that, I just don't think, you know, these studios think, oh, crap, like, you know, Far Cry can't be a 10-hour game anymore. Fans aren't going to like that. So we've got to deliberately and inorganically bloat these games out. So I think game length, if you justify it, you can justify any length. For instance, I just finished Death Stranding a few weeks ago, maybe a week ago, I think.
Yeah.
And I put in like 80 hours into that game. And for me, that was a perfect amount of time. Yeah, the story, I think, I felt it'd be a bit long at the end, but that was probably because I spent the last 10, 20 hours doing what I wanted. I could have finished the story if I beelined it in maybe, you know, 40 hours, 30 hours, whatever it was, but I was enjoying the game and falling in love with the world, where that's fine for me, but, you know, where it's the other way, where it's like, I really want to finish this game quick, but I can't because they're putting all these barriers in my way. I think with the longevity of games, that it shouldn't be about the game, the studio forcing a length upon us, more that here is a story, here is a surrounding sandbox. You can spend hours if you want. That's the freedom you have as a gamer in this game. You can spend hours and hours and hours doing what you want, but the story's here.
You wouldn't like in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I remember clear as day, there was a certain part where you got in the story where you then had to go off and do about 4 hours of side quests to level up to then continue the story, sort of padding it out a little bit, forcing you to do, because you had to do side quests there if you hadn't been already during your time, because you weren't going to be the high enough level to go further. That stuff irks you? It kind of irks me.
It's a forced barrier, isn't it? Because here's another thing, Dan. Here's a game just as long or as AC Odyssey, Elden Ring, right?
Yeah.
In Elden Ring, I never felt, oh my gosh, like, when is this going to end? Every time I put an hour into that, it was an hour I wanted to do. I wanted to try. Yeah, I might have pulled my hair out at some of the bosses, but that's part of the fun, isn't it?
You're almost going, oh my God, this never ends. Wow. That's the reaction. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, look at this underground area. Shit. This is crazy.
And then, like you said, Dan, some of the best games we've ever played, Last of Us, you know, these are short, sharp, 8 to 12 hour experiences. The first original Metal Gear Solid for me, you know.
But there is something, here's something that's interesting. When you think of the best games of all time, right, you think of The Legend of Zelda, The Witcher 3, Red Dead 2, Skyrim, Elden Ring. They're all super long. So I'm thinking, well, that's an interesting concept.
But then can I flip that and say to you, games like BioShock, games like Halo, you know,
yes,
games
like
original Metal Gear, Journey, you know, these sort of games are on the shorter side and are more direct, even Arkham Asylum, right? So yeah. I agree with you, Dan. I think
I'm saying is these are more recent titles versus the ones you said are older.
And that's probably it, Dan, isn't it? The trend of games nowadays are getting longer and longer, which is why the greatest games of recent time are long, because you're not getting short games nowadays. You are getting long experiences. But see, those games, Dan, it just goes to show those games, like, the length of them was never a thing. Like, it just goes to show, if you can justify the length, you know, I don't know, but it didn't feel like to me, Elden Ring, there needed to be, crap, we need this game to be 120 hours, let's fill everything to make that, you know, it just sort of organically became that. Death Stranding was the same, you know, where, as I see other titles where they are forcing a certain length by, you know, holding the gamer's hand or putting barriers in their way, some, you know, even Shadow of War, right, where they force a grind, that sort of thing. So I think there is, I think what we're just saying, Dan, how I quoted some games and you quoted some games and yours are longer and mine were short, it just goes to show that game length, actually, if you just justify it, it doesn't matter how long or short the game is. If you can justify the length, it's not a metric for success or for the quality of a game.
Because I think two games that spring to mind, which we've probably talked about before in terms of short, they're like short, 2 to 3 hours, maybe not even, Inside and Journey.
Yeah.
And even you could throw up Firewatch in there. I wouldn't say it's in those, but it's up there. Those games are super, super short, but also had the critical acclaim. Everyone raves about them. But are they considered the greatest games of all time? I never see those in the list.
Think about Uncharted 2.
Yeah, well, that's my favorite game, but that's also got a multiplayer component to it, if you want to talk about that. And the campaign for Uncharted, what, probably 8 to 10 hours? When I say short, I'm looking at 2 to 4 hours.
Oh, okay. If you're going,
so there's short, like, three barriers for me. It's like anywhere under 4 hours, and then like 8 to 14, and then long. That seems to be the sort of three main landing points.
I think for me, it just goes again to justification, because there have been games where I'm like, this is far too long. It does not need to be this long. There are games where I'm like, this is too short. I wish I had more time with it. And the story maybe wrapped up a little too quickly and they could have fleshed things more out. So once again, it's if the story, the gameplay and the mechanics and the sandbox around the game can justify its length, then I just think game length is something that's passive. It shouldn't be something primary. Do you get what I mean? Like, you shouldn't develop a game for a certain length. You should develop the game and the length is a result of the design.
Yeah, but I think they do now. I think they go, we're targeting 50 hours at least.
Yeah, and that's the big problem I see, where game length is used as a metric, for the success or the quality of a game, or we need to hold the gamers for this long. That being said, from a monetization point of view, I understand it. Like, businesses, you know, these gaming companies, these studios, they are businesses. They need to monetize these long live service models and things like that. But I think just from an art form, you know, I don't think J.K. Rowling was like, okay, the next Harry Potter book needs to be 1,000 pages, so I'm going to pad out, I don't know, Harry Potter getting out of bed and escaping the Dursleys. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
But I'm sure there's been...
Yeah.
There's probably countless times where developers have created the levels and they're like, oh, this is only running 6 hours. We need to get this to 8 hours. I'm sure that's happened probably with some of our favorite games that we don't even know about. And then they've had to create another level and then they have to add on the story. Maybe it doesn't work as well. That then it affects the storytelling. So it can also be detrimental or it can be a positive, depending on the situation. But it's just a very interesting one in gaming. You know, it's just a very interesting because TV and movies are, you know, 2 to 3 hours or 90 minutes to 3 hours usually. And then you've got TV, which is usually what, 10 episodes of 1 hour long or 45 minutes. They're very traditional formats. Whether it's games, it can be anything you want it to be. But it just tends to be leaning towards the best games now tend to be the longer ones, it seems like. And maybe, as you said, that's just the trend of the market because there's just more long games now. So there's more chance of them being the better games. Is that what you think?
That's sort of what I think. I just think if you're talking about the topic of gaming, my main point is that it shouldn't be used as a metric. It should just be a byproduct of the development of the game. It shouldn't be the goal.
Yeah. Do you prefer a certain length before we get off this one?
No. Like, if I'm playing an RPG, I would love a longer game. If I'm playing, you know, a story game, I'd like a more shorter game. But I wished the first God of War was longer. I wished, you know, maybe God of War Ragnarok to be a bit shorter. You know what I mean? So there's no real desire. It's more if I fall in love with the game and if I want to do more activities. I think the worst thing is when you run out of things to do. Like with Death Stranding, I did so much in that game, but I never felt like, I've got nothing else to do now and I want to be more in this world. It sort of satisfied me really well. But there probably are games where I'm like, I think the first God of War, I was like, I did everything in that game. And I just wish there was more. I wanted to delve into this world and the story more and everything. But
do you ever finish an experience and go, that was, which one do you say more? That was too long or that was too short? Which one do you find yourself saying more?
That was too long.
Same here.
Yeah.
See?
That was too long, I think.
Trend, it's a tough one. It really is. It's, at the end of the day, as you said, it's about the quality of the work. If the quality justifies it, then 100%. Now, on to the next topic, replay value. Very similar topic, which we didn't get into there, but replay value is an interesting one because usually you think multiplayer, but when it comes to a game like, say, Resident Evil 4, the replay value is in playing the game again in a different way or going for challenges or on a different difficulty or, you know. So, and some people don't like doing that. They don't want to play the game again. They want to find other ways, like maybe a spec ops mode, a co-op mode, or a challenge room, or, you know, something like that. An arena mode, like Sifu added. So what's your take on replay value? Because I'm one to replay games, but you're not. You've never been one to really replay games. You don't really care about replay value, do you? It's not something that comes into your mind when purchasing a game.
Yeah, I guess how do you define replay value, like you said? Because in some ways it's playing the game again, but for different, in a different way than your first run through. Or like you said, it could be I finished the campaign, I'm going to play a different mode now. So still like a new experience. You know, it was funny though that maybe 5-10 years ago, every game was getting attacked on multiplayer mode. I think the biggest one was Spec Ops: The Line. It had like a multiplayer mode, and it was like, why does this need to be here? And I'm pretty sure the developers, like, who was the publisher? Yeah, they requested that these developers, is it Jaeger?
Hold on, Spec Ops: The Line had a multiplayer.
Yeah, it did.
2K.
Yeah, it would have been. Well, yeah, I know 2K purchased Jaeger. Is it Jaeger?
Yeah, Jaeger and Darkside Game Studios, yeah.
So I know they purchased them, but I'm pretty sure Spec Ops came out before the acquisition. But anyway, whoever the higher-ups were, they wanted Spec Ops to have a tact on multiplayer, and they just had to force themselves to create one.
Some of the tact on multiplayers have been good. Most of them not, but there has been some gems in there.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, I think Naughty Dog are actually so underrated. so underrated in their multiplayer. Uncharted's multiplayer was a hell of a lot of fun. Factions was a hell of a lot of fun. So I wouldn't say they're tacked on, but they are so secondary to what the primary experience of those games are, which is the narrative.
Remember the AC one?
Did you I loved
that was a good one.
I know I wasn't a fan, but I loved AC.
Which game was that?
Well, Revelations or AC 3, anywhere from 3 onwards. For me, the big one was Revelations, where I played that, I forgot what it was called, is it Wanted? Where you just have a picture of the person.
And there's all random NPCs around.
And you have to like figure out by the way they're moving around who is the human. It was so interesting. That was such a good game mode. And it'd be even harder now with more realistic NPCs and AI. I'd love to see that game mode nowadays.
Did Mass Effect 3 have multi from memory? I swear it did.
Yeah, Mass Effect did. Yeah, so Mass Effect 3, it actually helped with your readiness meter from memory. So the galactic readiness was a system in the campaign where you're ready to fight off the Reapers. And
I could have sworn people love that.
Well, the thing was, I don't know if people were happy that there was multiplayer that affected your galactic readiness in single player. So it was something they were trying to do. But look, going on to the former one, which is how to play a game again, this time in a different way.
Yeah.
I think it's just a natural thing, isn't it? Like you said, Dan, Resident Evil with challenges or Sifu with, doing different rooms or finding the different. You might go through a run of Sifu and not explore everything, and then there's other doors, So you get the key card and they can unlock this shortcut. There might be something unique there. The most recent one I can think of is...
Well, what I was going to say is that games like Skyrim are different in that you would go into it again trying out a completely different build. And so the story will be the same, but your gameplay experience will be completely different because one, you'll be, let's say, a sword and shield, and then the next you'll go arrows and spells or something. That's an example.
RPGs are probably their most easiest because you can always do different builds. Even Mass Effect, right? I would do.
You think they just naturally have it there? Like a Baldur's Gate 3 recently where there's so many. But that's different, Baldur's Gate, because you've got all the different options as well in dialogue. And all these endings, so that helps with replayability.
Yeah, I mean, Mass Effect as well for me. Like, you could not only from a gameplay point of view, I could do a run as a biotic, I could do a run as an engineer, I could do a run as just an assault. But then you've also got the other side. I could completely choose different dialogue options, go down a renegade path or a paragon path. I could choose to save different people or alter the story in different ways. So there's multiple different. You could play it from a gameplay point of view. You could replay it from
But from a gameplay, is there much versatility? Not really. There's other ways.
Yeah, so. Mass Effect's main replayability is a story.
Yeah.
But maybe in an RPG like Dark Souls or Elden Ring, you could do a mage run. You could do dual-handed, whatever it is. So there is that. Even Jedi Survivor, right? There was so much replayability. Yeah. You had to go every time you unlocked a new ability, you had to go to the world again. And there's probably some sweet spot where it's like, this is just backtracking and annoying.
You've also got a game like Hitman, which I think is one of the greatest replayable Ultimate. Games because you've got so many different ways it can go. You change one little footstep and everything could change for your experience in that level. You kill one certain enemy and it'll create a flow on effect, a butterfly effect. So that's an incredible game for replayability, I feel. And then you've just got a game like Overwatch where the replayability is in the gameplay, the multiplayer. You just play games over and over and get skins or go up the rankings. And there's that side of it, the traditional.
It's dead. It's so dead.
Is it really?
I have to go into that one. Yeah, it's really bad. It's in a really bad
state. How have they fumbled that, man? It's so sad.
Dan,
they've got literally the best formula there. Everything's there. It's
one of the biggest blunders in gaming. Like, honestly, in the last 20 years, it is one of the biggest blunders. From going from Game of the Year, millions of people begging.
Catastrophically bad.
It is so bad. I can't believe that you've gone from Game of the Year, one of the most successful games of all time, to what it is now in the current state. But Oh, Dan, I was just going to say, yeah, Hitman, you could spend 20 hours on just the first level.
Which that I have done and had fun the whole time.
And that is the beauty of a game like that, where most people won't even see 10% of what you can do in each level. But you have so much fun, right? And the choice is there for the gamer to replay it.
Yeah, you can just play through every level and never come back, or if you want, the option's there. Yeah.
And I feel like I wish Jordan was here to talk about replay value, because I feel like a game like Hades is probably a game he would love to talk about with replay value, because that is more Returnal, where that is that sort of, what do you call it? I'm just blanking on what the word is.
Do you think Returnal's replayable? I've never thought to play it again, roguelike, but it probably is. I mean, like, once you've beaten it.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. But I don't know. One of my favorite one of my favorite things is the first Metal Gear Solid. There are two endings to that game. So you wanted to replay to get both endings. And
the entire game?
Yeah, the first Metal on PlayStation 1. So there's an ending. I think.
No, what I mean is that you can't sort of save scum, go back and then.
You can
okay. Save scum.
But the reason why you wouldn't save scum, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, at the end of each ending, you get a unique item and you can bring that into your next run. So if you save scum, you don't get that. And those items are good. So if you save Meryl, which is what you did, Dan, when you outlasted the torture back in the day when we played it together, you get a bandana. So in the next run through, you get a bandana. And that bandana gives you infinite ammo. So you never have to look for ammo.
Wow. That changes the game. Yeah.
If you submit to the torture and let Meryl die, you Otacon will be at the end of the game, not Meryl, because she'll be dead. And he will give you stealth camo. So that's where you can be invisible the entire game.
Well, that's kind of cool too.
And then if you play it a third time, you get the tuxedo snake. So the whole game he wears a tuxedo, like 007. And I think like the cyborg ninja is like red. So it's like this palette swap and it looks really cool. So I don't know. That's an old school, but that's a nice way to reward gamers. And especially in a game where there is not, you wouldn't really replay that game, like aside from having fun and playing it again. So,
well, going back to my original question, does it ever come into play for you when purchasing a game?
No, it doesn't. I mean, if you're talking about traditional, I'm not talking about roguelite or those sort of games, but if you're where the replay is inherently in the mechanics of the game. But aside, you know, for me, a game would just be, I would judge it on one run, you know? So let me put it like this. Sifu, there is so much replayability and you want to do the levels again. You want to do a run where you don't die. You know, the first time I ever played Sifu, by the time I was in the fifth world, I was like 75, right? So you guys got to play it again and go through the early levels. But that's part of that. I'd still call one run finishing the game. So within that whole start to finish the final boss, I played all those levels again and again and again multiple times, but that's still one run. So in that case, no, I don't think of replay value much in the consideration of purchasing a game.
I'm a bit different though to the traditional because, you know, I'm working on a game, I'm creating videos, and so my perspective is very weird in this whole thing. Replay is good for me for actual videos, so it's hard for me to, you know, like for Resident Evil, there's different things you can do, or Baldur's Gate 3, there's so many different options that would be good to create videos on. So I inherit, you know, I've got a bias where I like games like that, like a Detroit Become Human, where there's so many different endings that I can create more videos, content, because I love creating content on these games. So stuff like that, I inherently sometimes just have a little bit of a bias over. So, but if you take all that out, I don't really care about replay value. Like Journey, I played it once. I absolutely loved it. I'll never play it again. You know, The Last of Us Part 2, only ever played it twice, but the second time I didn't really want to play. I was just doing it for the platinum. I really just wanted it to be a one and done because it's so fucking depressing. It's not an experience you really want to replay, even though the gameplay is really great for me anyway. I know you thought it was a bit longer than tooth at times, but it's dependent on the game, you know. Hitman, as you said, I've played that mansion level, you know, the one in
Sherlock Holmes,
you know, Knives Out. Fuck, that is one of the greatest levels, man. I love it. And at the F1, level. Absolutely love that one too.
I've
done everything. So, you know, some of these levels I absolutely love and I'll spend 20 hours in. So now, Vic, audio logs in games.
What do we think of audio logs?
Audio logs are an interesting one, man, because they're still doing them to this day. They haven't found a better way to do it, it seems like. Is there a better way to do it?
Is it the Voxophones in BioShock? I thought they were probably one of the first people to do audio logs, right? Because before that, it was just written and reading. But
yeah,
the beauty of the audio logs is you can continue to play the game
while
you are listening.
While you're listening to the backstory.
And that's probably the best, in my opinion, because one of the more recent games, which I had so much fun with and I thought is a phenomenal game, is Control. But there is so much reading.
Text.
You just have to sit there and read and read. And I'm like, I mean, the lore is so interesting. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just like, this is just too much. Especially when playing Control is so fun. I didn't want to stop and read stuff.
But when you think about it, how dumb is an audio log? Like, all these people have left audio logs just before they've died and stuff. It's just, it's ridiculous.
But even when maybe it's less about the audio logs and more about just stopping a game to exposit some story. You know, cutscenes are probably the most, you know, the classic. You stop a game to sit there and watch a cutscene. But I think of, you know, Metal Gear Solid codec calls. You know, in the original Metal Gear Solids, maybe one, two.
But they stop you from playing.
Yeah. Well, all the original Metal Gear Solids from 1 to 4, before Metal Gear Solid 5, the whole game would stop. You go into a new codec screen.
But are they optional?
Yeah, you can skip them, but you wouldn't. I mean, there are some mandatory codec calls.
Yeah,
but you can skip
them.
You can skip all of them. You can skip all of them, even the mandatory ones.
But you can skip cutscenes.
I would say skipping a codec call is equivalent to skipping a cutscene because there is so much important information in that stuff. But with Metal Gear Solid 5, it would just be an earpiece. So those codec calls would be, you would be, while you're playing, you'd be listening to them.
Yeah.
The reason I wasn't a huge fan of that is while I liked that because it is this open world, you don't want to be stopping, is that Snake or Big Boss, he never talked back because. If you're in the middle of a base and you're sneaking and you're right next to a guard and you can't talk back.
Limitations.
And there was this, I think there was this, I don't know if it was a money thing to get Kiefer Sutherland or if it was Hideo's creative vision, but Snake just didn't talk that much in the game. And I think part of why I've loved Metal Gear is because I want to hear Snake. I want to hear, he's a character I want to hear talk, I want to hear his view on things and some, you know, the dialogue between him and the different characters. But he just barely talked in the game and he was more of like just observing everything. You know, audio logs I think are good in the fact that they allow you to continue playing the game whilst also, getting.
But what if you got a game like Dead Space and you're listening to the audio log and then all these enemies attack and it's super loud and you can't hear anything?
Yes.
There's that side of it as well.
That's true. And then it's like, okay, well, if you really need this person to hear this part of the story, do you just have cutscenes? And then the game is just full of these cutscenes that are stopping the game. And
yeah.
It's hard, man. It's really hard because.
But it hasn't evolved. They haven't found a way to do it better because games still are doing it to this day. It's like we're locked into it. It's like they haven't found a better way to do it. Maybe there isn't a better way.
I mean, that's the thing. Is there a better way? You know, when you watch a movie, you're sitting there and just watching. So everything they need to explain, they can just feed it to you. Same with reading a book. But with playing a game, you're experiencing the story and you are doing something else and playing a game. And you kind of have to do both at once. And it can be hard to exposit something while they're playing. So I don't know. Like, look, maybe one thing that is kind of revolutionary is maybe environmental storytelling. So
yes,
not just through logs, but you see the fallen world, you see the designs, and Elden Ring is phenomenal at that. So, you know, maybe Elden Ring have started that revolution because I don't remember much reading or text there, but no. I will say Elden Ring is probably on too far for me because I didn't get anything. Like, I saw all the worlds, but I would have had to watch.
Well, you've got to go really looking. Videos. Yeah.
Yeah, you've really got to go looking. So maybe there is a balance there, Dan, where.
What about Last of Us? Because that's there's no audio logs in that, right? There's only
yeah, but you talk.
What do you call it? Notes that you'll read.
Yeah,
there but are those notes, ones but are very delicate, and you want to read them. Remember the one that you always talk about, the where
Firefly.
They're in the sewer.
Yeah,
that whole story that plays out there. Incredible little storytelling there.
That's true, but I think the other thing with Last of Us was the optional conversation. So I remember Ellie looking at a billboard optional. Of a model. Yeah.
Key word.
And you learn about, I guess, her and the world.
And the jokes she can pull. So you can either keep playing or you can stop and press triangle. So that's they've probably, not many other games have done it like that, now that I think of it.
But I think The Last of Us did it well because it was during the moments of levity that those conversations, you wouldn't do it while you're sneaking around.
Correct.
But
it's a pacing thing.
Yeah, and not all games have that levity.
No.
You know, like a Bioshock, there's just too much going on. Like, that's probably why the audio logs were so good in that game or so handy. Control, you know.
Too much text for you. So you think they would have been better served as audio logs in Control? Because then it might have been so much text you're not even listening. You're playing the game.
I don't know what the solution is. Is it audio logs plus environmental storytelling plus more cutscenes?
Like a balance of everything, seems like.
I don't know. Because, see, Control didn't really have many cutscenes from memory. So,
yeah. I'm just trying to think of some other games, how they've done it.
I mean, Metal Gear Solid has hours and hours of cutscenes. Death Stranding's last cutscene was like 2 hours. So, you know, that's how Kojima does it. But...
even Atomic Heart I was playing recently had audio logs. Halo Infinite, Mass Effect has audio logs, right?
Yeah. Well, they have, not audio logs, but they're just more of a codex.
Fallout's a big one.
Even Mass Effect, the way you would communicate lore is through talking to Garrus or talking to your teammates. And because you love those characters, you are invested in listening to everything they have to say. So it's less about the medium and more about desiring the gamer to want to listen or want to explore. Because with Mass Effect, I wanted to listen to every little thing about Garrus, every little thing about Tali, because you want to know your characters and they're great characters. So whenever they talked to me about their home or their past, you wanted to listen to that and actively engage in that conversation. But yeah, I mean, that's probably why it's optional in games like Control and stuff. It's because... I did start picking letters up and not reading them towards the end, you know.
What about Fallout? You know Fallout, how they have those terminals that you go into and you can read?
I never did that.
Are you the same? Yeah. See, that doesn't work. Same for Atomic Heart. They did the same thing. I never read them. I cannot be bothered sitting there and reading shit on a computer. So
it is optional, I guess.
No, I know, but...
I guess it didn't affect...
but the way it's presented, it could have got me in, is what I'm saying.
I think so, because, see, the one of the things about Fallout is the vaults, right? And any Fallout fans know that each vault had a different sociological or psychological experiment in them. Yeah. So, for instance, some vaults...
There's a mystery involved.
Yeah, there's always this just really messed up experiments. So, but they don't tell you that. You've got to come across that in a terminal and... So maybe there's a better way to present it, but I don't know. It's tough. Yeah.
All right, Vogel, for our last one, we're going to tackle silent protagonists. So this is an interesting one that we're still getting a bit of both. We're still getting characters that'll talk, some good, some not so good, and then we get silent protagonists who can detract or add. Where do you stand on that? This is an interesting one because depending on the game, like, there's some games where the protagonist, like Atomic Heart, where you haven't played it, but not many people were fans of him. Let's just say that. He was a bit cringe, the way the lines were delivered. But then you've got other ones, the protagonist that you play as is actually quite interesting. So where do you land on this one? Because as you said with Snake, you wanted him to talk more rather than less.
Yes. I see silent protagonists as harder to do than talking protagonists. And for me, Asylum protagonists. I think RPGs really shine with asylum protagonists, but I think there is a subtlety in the way to, you got to do it right. And I think Atomic Heart, you pointed out really well. Was Far Cry 5 asylum protagonist?
Yeah, he is asylum protagonist. Yeah.
And see, I found a difference there because I never played Far Cry 5, but I know one common thing was people was asylum protagonist where the asylum protagonist is there so you can put yourself in the shoes of the person and be the protagonist yourself. But
yeah,
I think asylum protagonists are really hard to do because I still feel like I put my imprint on a character with someone like Shepard. Even though Shepard had limited dialogue, they had limited dialogue options and different choices, I still felt like I was Shepard. There was this thing where Shepard is like a badass, like the reputation. So there was an interplay of both.
That reminds me of Doom. He's silent, but he's a fucking badass, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets away with it. You don't need him to speak.
You don't. And so there's probably games where you don't. And like you said with Atomic Heart, there's probably games where you should probably have a silent protagonist. But I just think it's really easier said than done with a silent protagonist. It's a lot harder to do. So people who do decide to do a silent protagonist.
Good on them. Yeah, because it's tough to master.
They need to make sure that they. Yeah, because, you know, one of my favorite things about Far Cry 3 was the back and forth with Jason Brody and Voss. And Jason Brody becoming this, like, from this party boy to this badass.
But he wasn't
warrior.
Particularly that good either, really.
But he was
mandatory for the story to the back and forth. Yeah,
it was just interesting. The least thing was interesting.
It wouldn't have been the same game if it was a silent. Probably right. Because Voss would be talking to no one. There'd be no back and forth. There'd be no reaction.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So it is needed.
I'm looking at like best silent protagonist, and someone said Rocket League. I don't understand why that's the silent protagonist. But anyway.
I think of Skyrim again. I think of Bioshock.
Yep.
Where they did it perfectly. Even a game like Crash Bandicoot, you may not think of it. It sounds pretty ridiculous, but he says a couple of one-liners, and that's about it, really.
You see, Coco talks, Aku talks, all the talk to Crash, and it makes sense because they all rely on Crash. He's the hero, but it'd kind of be weird if Crash. I just feel like the magic would be gone if Crash talks.
He visually reacts, which can work quite well. Yeah,
and that's where that shines. Or even Call of Duty with, I guess, the original Modern Warfare 2. I'm pretty sure you don't talk. In Modern Warfare 3, you do, but in Modern Warfare 2, I don't think you really talk. So there's just an essence about experiencing the story. Because with a silent protagonist, you're just reacting to everyone around you and you're experiencing, there's like this externality to the way you experience a game. You're experiencing the game through everyone else and what they're saying to you and doing to you, where with a protagonist that's not silent, you're obviously putting your own imprint.
Well, the goal for the silent is for you to become that character. That's what they're trying to go for, right? In most respects. Usually you'll find their first person games sometimes. Although then again, one of the best examples is Link, Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and that's third person as well. So they've been able to master that. So even Mario, I mean, he doesn't really speak. He's kind of like Crash. In many respects, very, very visual in his reactions.
Bioshock 1, you know? I think Jack.
Bioshock 1, Jack. Yeah.
He didn't talk. So, I don't know.
You don't speak in Elden Ring, do you?
Yeah, you don't speak in Elden Ring.
Not much, yeah.
So, I guess it just goes back to game length. Can you justify a silent protagonist? Because you got to think about this. If you're a character that doesn't talk, it can get pretty boring for the gamer to just be silent throughout the game. So you got to make it interesting where if you're someone that's always talking, that's putting an imprint, that's affecting other people, it's really easy. It's much easier to engross the gamer. Like with Shepard, he's talking to other people, making these direct choices and directly impacting the story, where with maybe Doom Guy, everything's happening to you and you've got to fight your way out of it. And you are, in a way, changing this narrative direction of the story, but it's more in an action way rather than sort of this dialogue way.
Yeah, it usually tends to be the more gameplay heavy games that rely on gameplay of a story have a silent protagonist a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I probably prefer everyone talking, actually, now that I think of it, over silent. I've never been one to think, I want to be this character, this is me, so I don't have a voice. I don't know. I've always wanted, I like it when there's a, I'm playing as Lara Croft, I'm playing as Nathan Drake.
Yeah, yeah.
I am that character. He has his own personality.
Because when I play Doom, I don't think like, oh, man, I'm Doom guy. Like, oh, that's me, man. I'm the one shooting everyone. Like, and I don't think that's what Doom is trying to do, right? But, yeah, I don't know. The whole mantra of silent protagonist so that the gamer can fill in the shoes of the protagonist, it's never worked for me. I've never seen a situation where I've wanted that or where it's actually worked. And probably the only time it has is actually when it's not silent, when it's someone like Commander Shepard, where you can customize the player and the character and then make the choices yourself, but there's still a talking involved. So, yeah.
Even Pokemon, that's silent. I just thought of that one randomly. Pokemon silent, they do that all right, actually. Yeah, I haven't played a Pokemon game in a while, but yeah, they got me in. So, no, there's many different examples, but thanks for joining me today, Vike. We covered a couple of key core, what do we call them? Core topics.
Topics. A lot of others like physical games versus digital games, what we think of the live service model, is how detrimental is graphics or how important is graphics, game difficulty, open world design. So,
and if you guys have got any, hit us up and we'll put them on the list. We want to get through as many as possible. Mm. There's some very interesting things we can go into, but Vikarth, it has been a pleasure to be with you. Anything else you want to say?
No, mate. Oh, Mortal Kombat, new trailer came out today.
Couldn't help himself.
New
trailer came today.
Yeah, mate.
As the time of recording, yeah.
Yeah. This, because it's during Evo, this is going to be the greatest Mortal Kombat of all time. This is going to be MK9 levels as good. I've already called it. It's phenomenal. The characters they're bringing back from the 3D era. Oh, man.
Like, what was so good about this trailer? Just store Ashra more story.
And Havoc are back. Serena's
Who's
back.
Who's Ashra?
So these are all 3D characters. I wasn't a huge 3D guy. I never really played any 3D games, but they are particularly from the 3D era of Mortal Kombat. So they are a lot of fan favorite Mortal Kombat characters from the 3D era. I think Ashra was particularly from Deception, MK Deception.
Geez, they've really gone all out for this roster. This is going to be like the greatest fighting game roster of all time, mate.
And they're doing a boys where they're just, well, not a boys actually, but they're rebooting the entire story, and they've made so many changes, and every single change has happened. I'm like, this is good. This is better than the original lore. Like, it's phenomenal. The way they've done Scorpion and Sub-Zero, the way they've
But doesn't that go against like
races and
isn't that like making Batman his parents survive? Isn't that going against the art of the character?
Yeah, I can understand that, but I also see what Ed Boon was saying at the end of MK11, where he's like, we just don't know what else to do, and they wanted to reboot it, and it's
another game.
I think the thing with that, Dan, is it's not like they're redefining, like Scorpion now shoots ice and Sub-Zero now shoots fire.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, for instance, in the new Reptile trailer, you know, in the past game, sometimes Reptile, particularly in the early games, was just a ninja. He was just this human ninja with a green palette swapped ninja outfit. And then in the later games, he was like a full Reptile.
Yeah.
And, you know, we wanted both, but we didn't, you know.
Now he's human, is he?
Now he's both. He can shape.
Oh, okay.
You know, for instance, that's cool. A good one. Yeah. Another one is, Sub-Zero is now, and Smoke and Scorpion are now like all sort of family in a way. Smoke is like a adoptive brother, but it's you know, Kuai Liang and Bi-Han instead of Hanzo. And like, it's a lot of changes that are risky to do, but I think it just opens up so much more, and it's way, way more exciting to see what happens.
Everyone's super excited. I haven't seen a bad thing about this marketing rollout. Like,
even Baraka, there's not a race anymore. He's just got a disease that makes him like that. So it's not a separate race.
Wow.
So that's really interesting. Yeah. And he's sort of like a good guy fighting for his people that are also have that disease. So
were they playing this game at Evo, or was it the old Mortal Kombat?
I think it was MK11. But there might have been some at Evo. I haven't had a full look through Evo, but it's, yeah, just really exciting.
Evo's done, right? Yeah.
It ends like today.
Yeah. So, cool.
Very excited.
Very exciting. All right, Vic. I'll see you in a few weeks from this recording be back. And everybody take care. We'll see you soon
for a big
ending to the year. But with that being said, it's been a pleasure to serve you. And we will see you.